Hi, I'm Josh, and having watched one of the more recent Disney animated movies and found it not at all up to snuff, I found myself asking, what you for, Wish?
Goodness.
I feel like if I were to try to do any kind of a pun intro using the title of our short, Pumpkin Guts, it would feel like I was just trying to graft it onto our format. And I'm Matt, by the way.
Format.
This is Charlie down in Austin, relatively soon, like right now, we don't know what season we're in. It's like 80 degrees. That's like 20 degrees. So we don't know what the fuck we're doing. But pretty soon it's going to get into murder weather season in May. And then after that will be the summertime here in Austin. And the only thing that you'd want to do is get the fuck out of Texas.
Yeah.
Original title.
And we are Skinwalker, Texas Skin Ranger. And this is Harsha Hot Dog. Hey, first up, we've got a short called Pumpkin Guts, or Los Organes del Calabaza.
Ooh.
De la Calabaza. If you're from Spain, otherwise you eat a calabaza like a normal human. Hmm. Anyway, this is a thing that is set in the 1980s and is like a legend that involves somebody leaving a pumpkin at your door that has a kind of weird pinchy mark on it, and if you get it, then you've been chosen to be this year's sacrifice unless you can get some kind of entity, a body part that it demands, right? So it's kind of a cool thing, and like arbitrary as urban legends are, it kind of makes sense that she reaches into the pumpkin and there's just like a name and address and a body part, in this case an ear. I love when she reaches back into the pumpkin and pulls out the giant electric knife.
Yeah, that she didn't notice the first time in. Yeah.
Yeah, because then you're like, oh, either that's very silly or this is very supernatural all of a sudden.
And I think that is your comedy rule of threes, because it's reach into the pumpkin. There's nothing in here. Look, look. Oh, I found this card. So you already have nothing and then the card and then, waha, here's this thing almost bigger than the pumpkin. Good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Almost, definitely bigger than the pumpkin, I thought, but
you're probably right. I bet that'd be the thing where you just pull it up from behind it so it looks like it's coming out of it. Yeah.
Hmm. It's the Mary Poppins. We've all done it.
Exactly.
So don't look it up on Urban Dictionary. A spoonful of sugar will not help that medicine, but you might go down.
I'm told your love is like bad medicine.
Our love is like water. Beaten down and abused for being strange in the way that water is.
Hey, hey, hey.
Yeah.
All over
hey,
you.
Hey,
all over.
Hey.
Yeah.
Man, at sorry to derail, not really, but at the Twin Cities Con this year, there was a woman dressed as sexy Hey Hey from Moana. And she just walked around going, hey, hey. It was kind of great. And by sexy hey hey, I don't mean like a scantily clad woman in like feathers. I mean like giant bird costume with like a push up bra.
Yeah.
Hold
good
on.
Stuff.
Yeah. Hi, hi. It's beautiful. Anyway, Pumpkin Guts, man, I don't know. It very accurately pulls the vibe of those kind of grainy 80s movies. I don't know, man. I didn't quite feel it, and I'm not quite sure why.
What say you, Charlie?
I'm kind of in the middle. It's sort of like it was excessively 80s-y, which I kind of don't have a whole lot of patience for anymore these days. But I do very much enjoy the like, oh, it's an urban legend, it's a folktale, but it's like a real thing that occurs, like. Like, you know, this, like, sweaty pumpkin arrives with this little weird little pumpkin butthole, and you have to, like, do this thing. And, like, it's like, oh, it's this thing. And then, like, it quite literally happens in the way that, like a 14-year-old would tell it. And it's, like, it's literal. And it's, like, okay, I kind of enjoyed that. I probably would have, I think, if it had been slightly more, I don't want to say serious because I don't think this is played for laughs per se, but like I think if it could have been presented a little bit more straightforwardly and maybe less in the kind of 80s pastiche, I probably would have been more into it. Because, and you know, they've got so much try. Like that final bit is like it's edited kind of crazy, you know, the monster and the stuff, and you know, it all fine. You know, like that's just all the try. So like, good. You know, go for it. And so, you know, I did give a lot of credit for that for sure. So I would say kind of like a push plus or like a watch D, you know, kind of area. just because, I mean, I think there's enough effort and try here. The 80s pastiche thing is sort of like especially with like the thing where the two like lines bleed across the middle together, that like kind of, it's like star wipe for people who are into like brutalist architecture, that thing. I was just like, okay, fine. So I don't know. That stuff I'm just sort of like, I'm kind of not super interested in necessarily, but there definitely seems like a lot of try for sure. So, you know, I appreciate that definitely.
I feel like there was one year, like 2017 or so, like where we saw several of those 80s pastiche shorts. And at the time, it was like, yeah, let's do this. You know, Turbo Kid, like, that's fucking great. Just give me a synth score. Give me some out-of-date practical effects. Like, give me some crazy acting. It was great. And I think I just burned it out, where it's just like there's so many that did that for no reason that now it's just like, yes, I know you liked Halloween, and yes, that does sound like the Halloween theme, but like surely stuff has happened in horror since then that we could be pastiching.
Yeah, I kind of have the same
pastiches,
way,
man. Where are my like frosted tips?
Ooh,
frosted lucky tips. I don't know. What do you make of this, Matt? Because I agree that it's very well made. It's just kind of
I like this. I don't think, I guess I'm not as burnt out on the throwback stuff when I feel like it all hangs together as a piece like this one did for me. I loved that they just decided this movie is yellow, like for all Get Out. And like, just the fact that like they lean into that. Cause like, yes, there is that certain look that like late 70s, early 80s have, which they're definitely like playing upon with like, yeah, the Halloween ish theme and all that. But there's a kind of campiness to it that means that while this is done like well and with talent and craft, it's also kind of homespun. And so like you can picture just like getting a yellow bed sheet or just a yellow, you know, gel or something and putting over the table lamp or whatever to get those incredibly drastically yellow scenes while our protagonist is on the phone or whatever. It just, and the fact that they have the big giant pumpkin monster, not just a slasher, to me is like sort of their way of tipping the hand of like, yes, have fun with this. We're just accepting all this as a legend that everyone is fully aware of and believes in because it does actually happen. Like, come along for the ride. You're not getting any more explanation than that. So for me, that was enough to make this quite fun. It's got some weird, gross shit. It's got silly old school stuff that I thought hit the right notes for me. So yeah, I don't know. It's fun. It's not going to like stick to your ribs like Curve or something like that, but it's fun. Yeah.
And I guess you get Dark Harvest.
That was the other thing that made me think
to feature.
Yeah.
And Dark Harvest, like I was sold on that despite it's feeling like a 80s movie set in the 60s. But it did it in a really naturalistic way, and I think this was in a more calling attention to itself way.
Well, I think Dark Harvest was trying to do Stephen King, and that's maybe a little more friendly, whereas this trying to be John Carpenter is a little bit more hard to not raise an eyebrow at. I don't know. At least for me, it would.
Yeah, again, like the putting together 13 coherent minutes of film in a way that's like edited well and shot well enough to know what's going on. Like, they definitely hit that bare minimum. And then, you know, like this is pretty good. It's just not quite my speed. So like I damn it with faint praise, and you should watch it because you might like it more than I did.
There you go.
I think it checks out.
Anything's possible.
Or maybe you're just right. Like me.
I'm kind of a grumpy son of a bitch. Sometimes. I don't know. Let's, we could kick off with, I feel like we have three middle movies this week.
We really do.
we, let's kick off with what you wish for, or lo que deseas, or lo que esperas, because I kind of loved this movie.
Oh.
Even though it is so stupid, you guys. Like, our protagonist at one point needs a fake passport, so he goes to, like, darkweb.com and Googles fake passports, and he has one in, like, a week.
I don't know, dude. Sandra Bullock told me that's exactly how it works.
Right. It's just...
Would that have fixed it, honestly, if this was a period piece?
Yeah.
Would that honestly make this a little less silly?
Maybe. But just
because, like, not being able to just immediately look them up online.
Yeah, no part of this makes any goddamn sense. It wants to surprise us, like, at the end of the first act, and, like, surprise, he's cooking people. Like, well, of fucking course he is. Like, it would have been a real left turn if he was actually just cooking something endangered, you know?
Yeah, my sixth note about this is, haha, you have to learn to cook for 40 humans. Like, it just was so obvious that it was going to be cannibalism from the moment his friend's like, yeah, it pays real well, but it's not all good. I'm like, oh, you're a chef with, oh, I get it. Cool.
But, like, what if it was just, like, Macaroni Penguin? Or, like...
Dude, please don't give my password on the podcast.
No, I mean,
is good.
It could have done that. It could have just been like another, you know, a thing that you rich people, rich weirdos would eat.
Rack of rhino or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that could be interesting. I don't know. Like he could just be in trouble, like in mortal peril because of his association with them and then not wanting to play along. It doesn't necessarily have to be cannibalism, but of course it does. But just like this is so fun and just so dumb in equal portions, and I ended up just kind of charmed by it and just enjoying Nick Stahl's face, you know, as he made various faces. So like I'm not mad at it, but Christ, it's stupid. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm kind of like I really enjoyed this. Me and the other people in the theater, but this was at Fantastic Fest 2023, and it's like it's one of my favorite ones that year, because that's like I just enjoyed this. Like, yeah, I mean, it's like any component of the mechanics don't hold up to really any scrutiny per se. That being said, like, I do kind of love the idea that, like, you know, anybody can argue, like, oh, well, you can just at any given point, you can make yourself disappear, you can do that, whatever. This kind of another thing, and it's sort of like, but if you're in a system that is just not going to be an option. Like, well, like, you know, like I think when we talked about this before a while ago, and it's the way I've described it to a lot of people, which is like, it's like the fuckedest version of It's a Living. And it's sort of like, that's kind of like what it is. Like, it's like, well, if I try to escape, they're going to clip me at 50 yards. And if I think I've escaped into the farthest reaches of the earth, they're just going to get me 2 days later. And it's like, so I don't have a choice in the matter, so it's sort of like that's not an option. Like it's kind of it. And so, the reason why the It's a Living thing that's stuck with me with this one is that, like, at different points, as it becomes more like heavy and more one more goddamn thing and one more goddamn thing, he just half the time he just has this thing of being like, all right, like it just sort of like, because what are you gonna do? Protest? Like, you can't. You know, like you don't have that option. So you're like, all right, so one more. It's like, you know, like the guy who works at Chuck E. Cheese has to clear the barf out of the ball pit. You know, you're like, oh, fucking, all right. And then next thing I got to do, you know, that kind of. So he plays that. He has that kind of weary, but like weary in like a office job sort of way. Weary that I really enjoy, like, because it plays off of the ludicrousness of the setup, but I love the real world like threat of like, it's like, oh, I'll escape and I'll do this, and it's like, no, you won't. So like, and I just think it's that part of it really makes me enjoy it more, because you're just sort of like, logically you'd be like, oh, well, this, could you just do this, and it's like, no, you just can't. Like, ah, okay.
I feel like this sort of falls in that the much more like disposable, like what we used to have for like a movie of the week type thing of like, this is not necessarily meant to be super intense or scary. It's more meant to be titillating and maybe a little wryly funny. Like, I do think pretty early on, at least I felt permission to just go, yeah, this is kind of dopey, but we're going to see it reminded me a lot of watching Meet the Parents, which I will cite every now and again on this, but as something that drove me nuts because it made me so anxious. And this is a movie that in the same way, we're like, what's the next awkward situation we can put this dude in, either as he tries to hide his identity, hide his attempts at escape, or hide the fact that he's hacking up and cooking a person. And it's just, but it's not done with like pulse pounding action or like, you know, the blood soaked aprons. It's done with like furtive glances and shuffling and sweating and mumbling. And like, it's a very kind of silly dinner party type movie. And like, it works on a certain level in that way, as being maybe like just kind of fun and not trying to be anything greater. Like, it's not trying to be The Menu, and that's all right. It's just, it doesn't mean it's like the best thing I've seen in a while. So it doesn't get like the highest kind of rating, but it's a double, right? Like, it's kind of fun.
Yeah. I mean, like when he's trapped between the cop and the girl who's just rolled up, yeah, and the corporate lady, is just delightful.
Yeah.
And it does kind of threaten to become a farce for a little bit just because it's so tense.
It gets a little noises off for a minute there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a movie where they serve a piece of this guy's nephew to him, and he unwittingly eats it. Like, that's a Shakespearean thing. Like, that's Titus Andronicus. And in this, it's really actually kind of like darkly funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I thought it played too. I thought it was just funny.
Oh, good. I'm not a sociopath on this one.
No, that was one of the reasons why I enjoyed this. That's why I enjoyed this so much. Is like, I think I remember laughing a lot at certain points of this where you're just like, you just kind of like, not even like, you know, the nephew feeding bit, sure, but like there's other parts of this that just sort of like the way that a corporate lady, Imogen, the character Imogen, that's like the, like her whole deal is sort of like a, like, oh, we got a schedule to keep, and we got to do this other thing. And, you know, like, she just has this, like, middle management sort of thing about her that I found very amusing. Like, just the most ludicrous situation, but just played very, very, very pedestrianly. So it was very funny.
Like, this is, I honestly wonder if this would be that rare case where maybe a trailer that set the tone that we ended up with kind of deciding on would have helped me be in the right mind frame to, like, enjoy this like from the jump, because I felt like I started watching this thinking it was going to be more straightforward, and then a little ways in deciding it was going to be more funny, and that made it feel almost like I was deciding for it to be funny, but maybe they were intending for it to be that way the whole way. And if like a trailer had showed you that was sort of the tone, it's like it's a little bit more cat and mouse, oh shit, in over your head type thing, would I have thought that from jump and then been more amused all the way through? I don't know. I don't know if it's us bringing that to it, or if maybe it isn't supposed to be funny. It certainly felt like it to me, though. Maybe we are sociopaths. I don't know.
Maybe we should, you know, instead of the cannibalism, what if they just had combined this with Infinity Pool? That's concept.
That's the other thing you made me think of. Yeah.
Where if you, like, commit a crime, then they make a clone of you, right, in Infinity Pool. But this would be rich people paying to have perfect clones made of themselves with all of their memories intact, and then watching them beg for their lives and then killing them and eating them.
That's a different movie. And that might be a cooler movie.
That's a little bit disturbing. Yeah.
That's a darker movie.
Just like rich people eating a guy. Well, of course. It's not even a metaphor at this point. It's just right. Gnawing on the bones. Fuck. I think the word that goes best with this movie and all movies like it is good. It's a genre unto itself. It's a hoot.
Yeah.
Is what it is.
Yeah.
It's, and a hoot is usually not that good, but it's very fun.
A lot of Burt Reynolds movies are hoots.
Yeah. You end up with a big old smile on your face when it was done, and you go, that was a hoot. And it, I guess if you're me. And so, yes, this one was a hoot. And for me, like, it's hard to rate a hoot because you had a good time, but you know it's not good. So I have to like deduct a hoot point or two, probably. call this
the ornithologist like a, listeners are just loving this episode.
Yeah. Call this like 6.5 out of 10 tongue sashimis for me. And, you know, see it. It's fun.
I'm right in that same neighborhood, kind of for the same reason. Like I had some fun with this. It was, I don't think it's ever scary. It did make me anxious sometimes, but I'm also really sensitive to that. Your mileage may vary, but yeah, this is fine. If this is a thing that's just on a streaming service you have, this is a fine movie to put on a weekend or whatever. Like, it's not going to challenge you too hard. So if you're watching dinner, Jesus, if you want to eat dinner and watch this, it's like, it's a perfect movie for that. And you could chat with the person you're with, you know, about the movie or whatever while you're watching this, and it'll be fine.
It's so a fun one to Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah, for sure. So for me, yeah, this is a 6 out of 10. Greta Lives on a Farm now, kids.
Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, I'll probably be the high man on the totem pole. Like, I quite enjoyed this. I like these genreless type of things where you're like, it's got enough in there that it's just kind of like, you know, some regular normal person is going to be like, ugh, bleh. But it's not so over the top or played for girls. What I love is that there's some significantly kind of unpleasant things, but it's not necessarily 100% played for like to gross out necessarily, which I really dig. Because you see that enough where, you know, a lot of the indie kind of auteur sort of thing is to like do gross stuff and have it be evocative. And like in this particular case, it was more just sort of like, it's like, there's some seriously unpleasant and gross things, but it's like, it's not played that way. It's like, it's not, that's not the thrust of it. And it's more just sort of like, so it's more of like a workplace comedy. And so it's sort of like, so that I really, really appreciate it. I really appreciate it for that. I don't know. I said that I recognize, just like with Hard Eyes and with other things where I'm like I recognize that the market for this is small. These type of things, I recognize the market is small. And, you know, they can't just be making things just for me. That'd be silly. But it's sort of like, I also can just appreciate and enjoy the, you know, that. I think there's something a lot of fun about that part of it. And especially given the thing where at the very end, you know, like he's being shipped off to Africa after he's got the thing planted in him. And the guy's like, he's like, oh, traveling chef, like that must be kind of an amazing thing. Blah, blah, blah. And he just kind of goes, yeah, it's real great. Like, it's sort of like, there
Do you think
go.
There's a draft where he says it's a living? There has to be, right? So. Or someone had to suggest it on set. Like, someone had to. And then someone was like, no, you can't do the Flintstones. Yeah, for the blooper reel. Come on, do it for the gram.
And then there's like a band in the bar lounge wherever else. And there's a guy with like a trumpet and like a mute. He goes, wah, wah.
It's fully diegetic, yes.
Oh, golly.
Do you want to keep chatting?
Sure.
Through one more? It occurred to me that we have Companion to talk about, too.
Oh, yeah.
So we could jump on that real quick. Sure. And fill that in. So Compañera is a Jack Quaid movie, and Jack Quaid just seems to be having a moment.
And good for him.
I could not be happier for him, because he's Boimler on Lower Decks, and that is one of my favorite things. And he's also
Huey in The Boys.
He's also great in My Adventures with Superman. He is a surprisingly good Clark Kent Superman kind of character.
Really?
Yeah, that one's neat. More people should watch it. It's
I will HBO. Try that then.
Yeah, animated thing. It's good. But yeah, Jack Quaid, Sophie Thatcher from Yellow Jackets, who's always fascinating to watch. She was just in Heretic as well.
Yes.
So they got the deck stacked on this one. This is one where I saw lots of scenes in the trailer, and I was pretty certain I was going to watch a certain kind of movie. And it turns out it was not that kind of movie. And it just kind of took a left turn, and then it just kind of kept zigging and zagging in weird directions. And like, I ended up really fond of this. Like, it was actually, it escaped hoot velocity, and it actually got up into the upper stratosphere. Like, I had a lot of fun with this. I know at least one of us didn't, but for me, like, I was constantly trying to figure out what they were going to do for the next bit, and just never did.
Were you not into it, Charlie? Because I don't remember if I said I wasn't, but I am into it.
I'm really conflicted, because like, there's a lot that I liked about it, and there's a lot that I really enjoyed about it, and a lot that I appreciated about it. But I felt I was very like frustrated with the scope, because I think they were very creative in the because oftentimes you get like things set in the future or future technology, or whatever, and it's like too large and limitless, and so it starts to get a little exhausting. So like I really appreciated this like near future thing and what they're going for, and like how the inventing the memories and stuff like that, like all that stuff is great. Like that's super creative. And then she's fantastic, and he's fantastic. They're really good. They're really good in general. And then the whole like robbery scheme, like totally jives, and like that all kind of works. But I just was one of those things where it's like, it's just sort of like it felt. I'm not sure if this is going to make any sense, but it felt like it was like a Godzilla movie set in rural Kansas, where it's sort of like, Godzilla stomps a town of 300 people. Like, okay.
So Troll?
Because Tremors works great because Tremors is wonderful. But like, Godzilla works because you've got Tokyo to contend with. And so like with this, I was like, the setup is creative. The ideas are really smart. So I was like, okay, but then you remove them and stick them in the middle of nowhere, which from a plot standpoint makes sense. But I just was like, no, son of a gun. Like I wanted more interactions that were like in the world and like ways to kind of like, maybe not be cutesy and hint at what's happening, but just like ways in which we can kind of see the peel back to some degree, or because in this one, pretty much like once that lady says like the idea of you or whatever, and you're like, well, okay, if you didn't already kind of get a sense that there's something funny going on, then you kind of, and I think within like 5-10 minutes after that, it's sort of like, and she's a robot lady, like. And so it's kind of one of those things. Like, it's just I admire a lot of creativity. I admire the people who are in it. I just was so bummed out by the scope and the scale of it, because it was just like, it's like I feel like there's so much more you can do with this, and areas that you can take it and places you can set it that aren't just in the middle of, kind of nowhere. And that was the thing that kind of made me kind of get a little bit like. And then in the third act, I was like, I was rooting for her, and I'm like, okay, this is gonna be awesome. And so like I said, I was very up and down throughout the whole thing. It was just, I really wish it was set in a different environment, or if they had done something different with the environment versus just out in the middle of nowhere.
I think you're just opposed now somehow to movies that are set in a house in the middle of nowhere. Because this is exactly what you said about Wolfman.
That's true.
So maybe it is just
we need more Godzilla movies. That's
just not doing it for you anymore.
Well, I think maybe it's just sort of like give.
Because I would say, well, yeah, I mean, but I would say the same thing I did about Wolfman, where I kind of enjoyed the more lockdown version of it. I just thought it was funny that we had exactly the same things to say about this as Wolfman.
There's a certain amount of similarity there, though, that actually kind of makes sense, though.
Just tearing through a little group of people.
Yeah. The thing is, I guess, like, as you describe it, Charlie, like, I think I am interested in that movie, too. But I do also like that I saw this movie, because I think the microcosm was interesting to me. But I do think like the broader, obviously much more expensive, let's see these things as part of society would be fascinating. But then it becomes, I think, a much bigger scope and a bigger story, and probably beyond the budget for this. But like, I bet that would be good, too.
That would be,
but I guess
good,
the idea that could be cool didn't detract for me from this, I guess. Yeah, Companions. Imagine would be a great
Companions
sequel.
The sequel, yeah.
Yeah.
That sadly, would be our the next box office.
Probably not going to do it.
Everybody wants to see fucking Nosferatu.
Big shrug for this one.
Yeah, well, it didn't get picked.
Who's the other one in this? Was the, oh yeah, the guy who plays Sergei, Rupert Friend, who's great at everything that dude does. Like, he's.
Was that the guy that was in Smile 2 as well?
He is, yeah, and he's also, yeah. He's in,
he's in another movie that's upcoming, too.
Oh, son of a gun. The thing that, oh my god, the thing with Claire Danes, the spy one, the fuck was that called?
Homeland,
thank you. He's amazing in Homeland. Like, he's so good in that one. And, like, every time Homeboy shows up in something, he's just, like, he's very Oldman-esque in the way that he can just kind of, like, disappear into stuff. And so, like, I really appreciated that. But that was a, that was another part of this that annoyed me, because I was like, oh, he's got this fancy house and thing, and well, he's a bad man. He's a bad man with Eastern European accent. And I sort of
that's a different guy than the one I was thinking. Sorry.
And it's like, but then, but like, give me something. Give me something. With that.
Then he gets killed very unexpectedly. And the final reveal with him that I love is when they ask him what he did to get his money, he says, I have had hands in lots of pots. I have birdie hands. Yes. And at the end, they're like, he was a sod farmer. And like, I never said he was in the, he was a bad person. I never said he was in the Russian mafia. That's just you making that assumption. Like, oh,
that's so good.
That's fucking beautiful. Yeah, I just kind of took this as like, it could have been the same movie if she were just a secret murderer, right? Mm-hmm. It almost doesn't matter that she's a robot until we get all the way to the end where we're doing like memory wipes and upgrades and stuff. So I just kind of enjoyed it as that kind of lock-in slasher-ish kind of thing. And just the little touches are chef's kiss, you know, the chef's kiss. The fake memory of the dance with the vampire and the T-Rex, like, that we get to see twice. Like, oh, that's freaking delightful.
I like, yeah,
death that was by really electric cool. corkscrew, people. Death by electric corkscrew. That's so novel, you know?
I'm glad you mentioned that thing with the Dracula thing, because that was a hoot. I like that when things do silly shit like that. Like, good.
And twice. Like, the whole thing twice.
The death by electric corkscrew was in my head as I was watching the movie. I said, ah, yes. Because when it first shows up, I'm like, no one has something that crazy in their house unless it's going to be a thing later. So I'm like, ah, that's Chekhov's gun. And when they did it twice before they do it to the dude's head, I'm like, ah, it's Chekhov's double-barreled shotgun. And I felt very pleased with myself.
And then she said, say goodnight, Josh, or go to sleep, Josh.
Yeah, go to sleep, I think.
The asshole's name is Josh, because come on, that's kind of an asshole name.
For sure.
Was there, so like, okay, one last little thing I want to say with this one, because I did like it overall. I don't want to make it seem as though, like, damning with faint praises, Josh says, like, I did actually like it, but it's like, there was just some things where, I don't know how these things work in your own brain when you receive stuff, but, like, the one other thing that stood out to me, and this is such a stupid nitpick, was that, like, obviously the technology, pretty fancy. To make this thing, and like the delivery thing with the multiple people and all the stuff and the whatever, and like you know, the gay friend guy, he presents as being kind of like successful and like rich or well off or whatever, but Jack Quaid's character, like the whole thing with him is that he's like in this like kind of schlubby apartment and like kind of a schlubby life, and it's like, and I kept being in the back of my mind, I kept being like, well, if you have a schlubby apartment or schlubby life, that doesn't necessarily mean that you don't go out and spend like $8,000 on like a sculpture of some anime character or whatever. Like, it's not just because you have a schlubby apartment doesn't mean you're just going to preclude you from spending money on something that's outlandish. But like in this scenario, it's like, it seemed like the introduction of Jack Quaid's character in relation to like his financial position, because they even they allude to that, like him being out of work or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, how did he afford the thing? And it's like, which is a dumb thing to hang up on.
Yeah, but I love that though, because he has that line where he said, I don't even own you. I make monthly payments. So he just has a
subscription. He's financed it. Yeah.
Yeah, like she could be repossessed.
So it's a robot on layaway. Yeah.
And like when he's giving her the bad news, you know, like all of the things once he's pissed at her, and like, I don't even own you. I make payments.
That's true. That is true.
That I can definitely see. Like, if there's a, you know, a streaming service where you just get a robot to fuck, I can imagine people lining up to pay the like $25 a month, $30 a month, right?
It probably wouldn't have hurt to have just, because a simple like one line, you know, like, yeah, like, I got laid off and hatched a plan, so he used his severance package to buy this thing or rent it or whatever, or who knows what. You know, he's blowing through his inheritance and he did this as a last ditch.
Yeah, there's some little, it was like Peloton,
you know? Yeah. But yeah, that's the thing, is maybe it's so affordable in this future that like it's like getting the new iPhone every time it comes out. People just do that. Who knows?
Yeah, just think about like if this thing costs $5,000 or $10,000, but what you are paying for is like the subscription service. You know, like I wouldn't pay the $15,000 to have a Netflix server, but I'm paying for access to the content, right?
Right.
So I wonder if she is the, you know, in the same way, like you said, phones, the hardware is just kind of the hook to get you.
Sort of the loss leader to get you.
Yeah, I guess I can see that. It just, I guess part of it was, I was just thinking like, what must this technology cost? But at the same time, I've worked with customers that are like, that are people that are really hung up on the premium cost of things, that are buying like, you know, Mercedes GL550s or whatever else. And like, why are you buying this vehicle?
Well, that's the thing, is it's all about what the person prioritizes, right? Like,
yeah,
as my old boss used to say, he delivered plenty of hot tubs to trailer parks. Like, they chose what to spend their money on, you know, and it wasn't a big fancy house. It was a well-appointed small place. So, you know, shitty apartment means you can afford sex bot. Note to self, choose shitty apartment.
Also, one of the most amazing and admirable cuts, by the way, I had to make sure to mention this, was that thing about when it cuts to them, like them having sex or whatever else, and it just cuts to like, not a fisheye, because that would have been too much, but it's just the right angle of like Jack Quaid, they're like, no! And then he lands, and she's just looking up, not in a frozen Stepford Wives way, but she's looking up in that way that, like, if you're not in a big hurry, but you're on an elevator kind of look on her face. And it's just like, it's just genius. It was just, because it wasn't played for gross, it wasn't played for, like, whatever, but it was just, it was perfectly done. Like, that was that cracked me up. I was giggling about that to myself like a good 10 minutes after that, because it was just like, it was so perfectly executed. I was like, that was, you know, that was just terrific, you know.
And then he says, like, go to sleep, and you're like, man, because at that point we don't know that she's a robot really yet. And like, Jess actually bristled at that. She's like, god, what a dick.
No, I did
and
too.
I was just like, yeah, oh, sure. Bet she's a robot.
Oh, so right. Good.
Yeah, overall, like, I thought this was really nicely put together and just kept me guessing, kept me, like, chuckling every now and again, like, had a good balance in the comedy. It's that last bit is actually satisfactory and lands the plane, and that is something that doesn't happen, you know, every given day. So yeah, I would say like it's an 8 out of 10, I would put it. It's I said in my review that it's like a Black Mirror episode blown out to feature length, but in a good way. Like that's like a good episode of Black Mirror.
Yeah, I was right there with you. I also gave this an 8. The thing that, like, I had a great time watching this, and the thing that made me really like enjoy the experience was I saw this as the mystery movie at AMC last Monday, the Monday before, whenever it was. And, you know, you pay $5 and find out what it is. And sometimes I'm like one of three people in the theater, and sometimes it's packed. And this was one where it was pretty packed. It was at least 75%, maybe 80% full. And, this got both like legitimate, like everyone in the audience laughing moments. And then when shit would get real, like, everyone in like unison gasping, and that's a pretty impressive feat for a movie. So and that was also really fun to see in a theater with people, so you could have that kind of like chills moment when everybody was like and you go ooh, and it actually like gives you the second little goosebumps, which is pretty neat. So yeah, I had a great time with this is a ton of fun. I would recommend this to people. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be the low man on the totem pole in a way that just sort of like is by no means indicating I did not like it. It just sort of like, I guess, got hung up on various bits and pieces, and I would have just loved this to be in a different setting with different stakes. Like, it just, you know, I would have just, I was thinking of like I love the movie Game Night that got not nearly the attention that it deserved. I fucking love that movie. Saw it like twice or maybe even three times at the theater. I think at least twice. And I just loved it so damn much. Jason Bateman and Rose McGowan and Sharon Horgan and a bunch of other people, and it's just fabulous. But like, take like the Game Night setup, but like introduce a robot lady to it. and like to something where it's like in a different setting. I guess that was the one part of it that I really got hung up on, was just the setting. Was like, that was the one thing that I just was like, I could not get over, you know. And but yeah, I mean, like I said, so you know, no malice, just a firm handshake and a nod and a 6.5 out of 10.
Fair enough. Tough but fair. Fair but tough. Tender but
juicy.
Cruel.
Fluff but tender.
And mild. Wait, no. I don't know. Oh yeah, let's take a quick break and we'll be back with our other couple of flicks. So next up, we're going to talk about Grafted or Injertada. Folks, this movie starts with a guy who has kind of a skin disorder, like a blemish, cherry angioma thing happening. And he is a scientist working to grow skin to like heal his damaged skin. And he manages to create a thing that grows, and it grows so fast that it grows over his mouth and nose, to which point he has to slice his mouth open with a scalpel over and over again to breathe as it is healing, as he is slicing. And he ends up with his daughter stabbing him in the face, trying to keep his airways open and failing. I say this because the rest of this movie does not, I think, match that promise at all.
Yeah, my first note is this is a pretty harrowing opening sequence, and then they're less positive after that. Not terrible, but less positive.
Yeah, and like I hate to be saying the apple doesn't taste like an orange, but if you start with that opening scene and this premise, this girl goes to school and she suffers from, you know, insecurity and bullying and decides to continue her father's work and with skin grafts, I was kind of expecting her to just keep kind of growing more monstrous, like a substance kind of thing. But and just like continue with the really unsettling imagery, because they seem to really to do that very well. But instead, it gets more like she accidentally kills someone, so she swaps her face with theirs using the skin healing serum.
I'll admit, I did not see that coming.
Yeah, but then just
that was like, whoa, that was a moment that really made me be like, okay, maybe there's a pulse to this. Like, holy shit.
Oh, see, that was where it lost me, because then it's just the other actress with a tooth, with like a goofy tooth glued in.
Yeah, see, I kind of like that shit. That kind of bonkers is fun. But I watch a lot of horror on Tubi, so.
Yeah, so instead of it, but like instead of it being creepy per se, it's just the special effect is she just turns into other people. And it took me so far out of it because I was like, this can't make the same nods at realism as the movie Face Off, which showed how they had to like put in a voice modulator and like sculpt and build up the cheekbones so that John Travolta could look like Nicolas Cage. Like, they tried. This one is like,
no, if you just look like a confused Labrador into the mirror and repeat a couple words, you got it.
Yeah, this is just like it. So that's just kind of ridiculous, and it's not what I'm looking for out of this movie. So all of the kind of, oh, now I'm this girl and watch how I kill this guy, I was just kind of shrugging my way through. And we have such a much more interesting story that could have happened with the homeless man who's disfigured. Mm-hmm. And she just kind of walks by him a couple of times, and then he, in the end, ends up kind of like skin merging with him.
Yeah.
And like, that is a cool ending, but it's a cool ending to a different movie.
Yeah, my final note
that I wanted to watch, right? Like, I don't know, like, this just, it started real strong and it ended with that really nice gross image, and in between was just, I wouldn't even call it a slack line. Like, it was just, it was on the ground, just lying there.
Yeah, it's very weird how it, like, because it has these moments of like inspired lunacy that I appreciate. I'm like, okay, I'm this is cool. I'm enjoying that you're kind of going for this completely out to Jupiter level of just nonsense.
It felt a little Stuart Gordon to me.
Yeah. So it has those moments. That's a great reference point, because like it has that kind of those kind of points, but it doesn't stick with them. And so like what ends up happening is then you get this sort of like plodding kind of drama beats, which feel kind of more mean than I think that they're intending them to be, it seems like. And so, like, a lot of the kind of stuff where, you know, some of the interactions with the blonde lady and then the teacher guy and whatever, like, a lot of that stuff just plays in, like, kind of like a very unkind and, like, kind of a time out of place type of way. And it's like, so it's really hard to kind of latch on to any part of it. And so then by the time you get to the last act and it's really kind of gone completely off the rail, you're still kind of anchored in by the fact that, like, are we rooting for her? Do we want her to succeed? What are we looking for? And it's like, I don't think it ever delivers that, because it doesn't seem to know how to treat her. Like, well, is she like the character or not? And I don't mean this because she's Asian, but is she like the character from Audition?
I landed a little more American Mary.
See, you fucker. That was what I was going to say. Is it more like the girl from Audition, where it's like it's a boiling pot that explodes? Or is it just sort of like she was always alluded to, and it's just a matter of poking the bear enough? You know, like American Mary or May. You know,
May,
is a good one. Yeah.
Or it's simmer, 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 simmer. It's always there, versus like Audition, which is a very steep curve. Yeah. It's like, which one is it? And I don't think that they seem to know. And so then that's what kind of made me feel uneasy at times. Cause I'm like, they seem to be kind of, I don't know, there's a weird relationship with their main character that I don't know. I struggle with that a bit.
Mm. Yeah, it's, I don't know. It seems like a film that the idea was written, and then like a first draft was written, and then they went and shot it.
It does kind of that feel. Like, it feels like some of the stuff could have been ironed out more to where it would have like had a more cohesive flow to it. But it does have it has those moments where there's just these moments of just like inspired lunacy, and some just jarring stuff too. Not even the gross stuff, but like that scene in the beginning where Dad's mouth starts growing over, and like, you know, the stuff going over his mouth and his nose and whatever, and you're like, ugh, and then it's slashing at the thing. But the look in his eyes though, like, half off of that actor, because it just legitimately looked just completely terrified in like a really real way. And it's just like, I just, if I'm thinking about this movie, the first thing I think, I think of that dude's face.
Yeah.
Like how scared he was.
There's like a weird like cheese slicer or something on a leg that happens pretty early on too. That was very,
she's like getting skin samples to practice
on. Just gnarly, you know? And I was like, oh, okay. Maybe we're going a little like, we're going to go for gross out body horror more. And they tap dance around it, tiptoe around it. I don't know what the correct word is there for that, but like, you know, because when someone gets their face cut off, like, surprise, there's just another face under there. It's like there's no real gore to it. It's just like the same face but wet. So yeah. Like, in some places they don't really go for it, and then other times that's excruciating, and like that's weird, and I don't know. And then there's like weird unintentional comedy. Like, one of my notes is my favorite line of the movie, or lines, I guess, where it's like, oh, are we celebrating? Oh, we are. And he proceeds to pull out like 8 minutes worth of coke. Like, it's like the silliest. That is not a party. I don't know what you guys are doing, but I don't know what you do. But it's a little, maybe it just shifts gears too far. It goes from like first to fourth and back or whatever. And just, it's hard to get slotted into what it's trying to make you feel at any given moment.
Yeah, like ultimately it was just like, just kind of a bummer of a thing to, and it, like, did it fail to live up to its potential, or did it fail to live up to what I imagined that it should be? Like, whose fault is it? I don't know, but it's still like this kind of clocked in under what you wish for me, for sure. I would say like a 5.5 out of 10, wearing the faces that she keeps in the jars by the doors is
nice. Similar neighborhood. I gave this one a 5 out of 10. Not mad at it. There's some great moments, and then there's some parts that you're just kind of a little more confused than like mad at. Mm-hmm. But it just it never kind of got its hooks into me and kept me the whole time. I was kind of in and out throughout. So not bad. If you got Shudder, you know, you'll get to it eventually, I'm sure. But no need to rush, probably.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of in that boat. I'm quite coming at like a 5.5, I think. It was like had some great moments, like just legitimately like whoa kind of moments, and I quite appreciated that kind of those parts of it for sure. And like I was like, whoa, that's great. But it just was like just kind of hamstrung by this like clunker of a script where I sort of like I just don't know that like kind of bitchy high school drama and sort of questionable sort of characterizations and this other thing. I was like, I don't know if that's the framer. Like I don't know. And so like for all the moments that worked, I was like, yeah, awesome. But then just seemed to be stretched really thin over this thing that just didn't. I don't know about you guys, but that's part of the thing that like in between moments that were really cool, it also felt very long. In this, like, it was like at a certain point, and oftentimes this doesn't really happen a ton, but a couple of times as we're going through this, I kept going, is it how much more time is there? Like, God, there's still a lot more time to go. Like, how, man, like, this just keeps going, and that's a shitty feeling to, you know, like, that's no fun. So it's kind of like, you know, there was that part of it too. Like, I never fell asleep necessarily, but it definitely was kind of like, I'm not engaged in the story or this conflict or where these characters are going. So I'm like, it just feels very long. So I say, I'll say 5.5. I'll say 5.5 out of 10. 5.5 out of 10. Like, well, you were so fixated on whether or not you could, you didn't stop to.
No.
Well played.
As they say in Splice, like, what's the worst that could happen?
Like Splice and then Species 2. They have some of the greatest lines of like the duh like variety. It's like, oh god dang. Like man.
Are you ridiculous bastards? Oh yeah. And so and then finally we had Get Away or by say. Probably. We got Nick Frost. We got Aisling B.
Yeah.
We've got a family that goes to a remote Wicker Man Island to watch their Wicker Man Festival. And they are just kind of clueless as the locals all want them gone, except the guy who rented the Airbnb to him. All of this I found very delightful. In the beginnings of this, just the ridiculous, sickly sweetness of the couple and the kind of dorky dad interactions with the kids. And like, it's like, this is me and Jess just like turned up two notches, right? Like, we would sit down and just like hold hands with each other on the beach. And like, I don't know, I related hard. It just keeps getting weirder and more violent, and that's pretty fun. But at the same time, like the everything is so outsized in this that I feel like it does wear you down over time. And I think that's where I ended up with this, is like, this is pretty fun, but it doesn't quite land. Yeah.
See, I had a different impression of the opening, and that's why I can't tell if I like this or not.
Yeah.
The setup was like what I expected from the trailer, right? Like they show up and it's all oops, all harbingers. And then like my next couple things that like I took note of were just like complaints that I hate spending time with these people. It feels like this movie knows where it's going and it's just trying to like fast forward through all the beats you have to get to the inevitable whatever. And then my note is, you know, if this turns out to be like a near dark situation, I might be able to forgive it. And then I'm like, oh, so like we just cut to the previously implied bloodbath at the diner. It's no longer implied. And then, damn, was I right about the near dark thing? And sure enough, I was. And like, I don't know if that's because I'm dumb and it took me that long to figure out what was going on, or if we were supposed to assume they were up to no good from the beginning. But like, it made sense retroactively that they were off and kind of shitty and weird in the beginning that made me hate them. Because they're not actually exactly what they're portraying, these super happy, nice people. They are in their own way, but they're also incredibly violent sadists and psychopaths. So, like, they would be off and unlikable if you somehow don't like the sheen they've put on it for face value to keep up appearances. So like, was the movie super good at portraying exactly what that would look like to get them to where they're at? Or was it too far and it was super annoying and that made me like kind of have to really work hard to have fun for the last half? And so like, is that like the best like rug pull, or is that the most annoying rug pull? I guess it's I'm leaning towards maybe it's a really good job. I don't know. It wasn't fun to watch though.
I liked it. It was, I don't know why, just feel like, oh, shall we go over here, mommy? Like, oh, hello, daddy. Like, they're the cheesiest motherfuckers, and I kind of was here for it. And then it did make more sense in retrospect to go, oh, because they were doing the, like, picture, like, children's picture book version of a married couple.
But they kind of do it when no one else is around, too, though. Yeah, I think they are just playing.
I was feeling that too.
So this might again be like an ultra love dad versus murder dad situation where I'm like, fuck these nice people.
Well, I agree that they're over the top, especially the kid who sounds weirdly like Daniel Radcliffe.
But it's not that I thought they were over the top. I thought they were assholes. Like, I thought they were dicks. Aww. So like, it's
they're
weird.
So cute.
But I don't believe them is the problem. And so is that
you
better?
Right
that,
not to. Right
that's the
now.
Thing. It's like, does that mean it's good? Or does that mean it's bad that I saw through it? Or am I just crazy and don't trust humans? So I'm know, just like damaged.
Charlie's got to cast the tiebreaker on that.
Oh, yeah, for sure, Charlie.
So this was very, I had such an interesting experience with this because like going into this, it was like, I was really excited because, you know, of course, Nick Frost is wonderful, you know, obviously, and
sure,
you can watch him and anything and he's just great. And Aisling Bae is like my would-be girlfriend. Like I think she's fantastic. I think she's a great stand-up comedian. And she's great at all the different the British chat shows and stuff. She's on a show which I think is still on Hulu. It's called This Way Up, and it's really goddamn good. And it's basically about this lady who like is recovering after like a full on breakdown, and she kind of getting her life sort of reorganized and. Kind of dealing with like with the real hurt that happens in situations with like addicts or people that have like, you know, do things that happen that are heavy, and it's like kind of a dramedy kind of a deal, but she's phenomenal in it. She's so good, and like I said, she's such a funny person. So I was super jazzed to watch this, and so I was like, so when we came out of this, like I was walking out like, ah, that was fun, that was a hoot, that was ridiculous, that was great. And Conlon was like, yeah, I think I like some dark comedies, but not all dark comedies. Like, it's because I think part of what why I enjoyed this was like it plays like it's almost a parody of like The Wicker Man and The Shout and, you know, the kind of folklore-y kind of things. Like it plays almost like a parody because you have the Vershki Burki Burki Durgies on the island that are like, oh, we have our island ways, and the detective guy's like, no, you don't. You have to follow the laws of the mainland because you're a part of this country, you idiots. Kind of like attitude about them. And they're like, oh, we have to with the council. He's like, whatever. Like, it's like there's that whole dynamic that almost plays like a parody. And then it was sort of a matter of like, okay, well, how is this going to unfold? And then I love the whole thing about they're just part of the sort of group that like pairs up as like almost like a traveling theater troupe, but their whole thing is like they just sort of build up their like blue balls for killing, and then they have to go somewhere remote, like wreak mayhem, and then just sort of like go on and do whatever. And it's like, and it's just really funny.
Like, and they have a slaycation app.
Yeah, it's just like, it's just so funny. Like that setup in and of itself, I found very amusing. So that part of it, I thought was so funny. And then like, as things are starting to kind of go and some of the setup that they do and whatever else, it's like, it's almost as if you're getting a slasher movie from like the perspective of the slasher, just in the sense that like, oh, people are going to try to do this, or they're going to try to do this, or, you know, somebody will try to, oh, I've been hurt, and oh, can you help me? And then blah, and that kind of stuff. And so it's playing up all these interesting like slasher movie things in a way that was like kind of subverting the expectations and those in that respect. And so I really thought that was quite funny. And I just love how fucking like unthreatening these island people are. Like, it's just sort of like oh, well, the English would have to die. And they're talking about their fucking play. Like, they're talking about, mm-hmm. like, are they going to show that part of the play, or are we going to cut that part of it out? And, like, I just think, oh, for fuck's sake, these nerds. And it's like, so, and I love that little juxtaposition, that playoff of things. And I want to talk, I haven't had a chance to talk to Conlon, but, like, I want to ask him, because I swear that part of this, that this is this version that's on Shudder now is, like, slightly shorter, I think. Because, like, I swear I remember more shit happening, where, like, the middle act, I felt like it was longer, and the one, like, more things happen, and there's some more stuff with the detective guy, I think, but, like, I don't know if I'm just making that up. It's like, I gotta ask him, because he'll remember better than I will. You know, and so the, I mean, it's just sort of like, it's just loony, and the fact that they basically get away with it, like, that's the, I think that's so, God,
after losing a hand and being not all that perturbed, like, very unimpressed. good indication of the tone. Also, though, you got to dig the townspeople when the lady says, well, I think this time we need to actually go through with the sacrifice, like the old days. And the guy goes, we haven't done that for 30 years. And I went, yeah, that's fantastic. Because you respect them to say like 300 years, right, or 200 years.
Yeah.
We haven't 30 years. Like, I was 16 the last time I killed a dude. I don't know if I can do it anymore. Jesus.
Well, I love the, I said, I love the, another bit that I love a lot was that I love the bit. And I got this from watching it again, was that in the early part, Matt, the part that was, you're like, oh, these guys are kind of assholes, whatever, and, mm-hmm. you know, the way that they're interacting with each other, there are a few moments that I noticed this time through that Nick Frost and Async Bay are, like, giving themselves, they're looking at each other, like, we'll give a little glance here and there, or, like, brother and sister do as well, where they'll, like, say something, and then they'll be like, you know, it's like, oh, you know, like, you know, sister of mine, or this, or whatever else. And they don't do, like, with their voice, they go, sister of mine, but they just do, like, a little bit of a glance or a little bit of a thing. And I didn't, you know, you don't really pick up on that the first time through. And then watching it again, I was like, oh, like, there, that's okay. Like, all right. Like,
that's why there was that much sexual tension between the two of them.
And, like, there's little sprinkling bits in there that, so there's little bits in there that I was just like, oh, for fuck's sake, okay. Which is great. And then just some of the deadpan shit, but the thing with the dead fox, whatever else, and he looks at the bag like it's dead. It's like, fuck's sake. So it's just like, there was a steady stream of that type of just stupid deadpan humor that, like, I really liked. And I fully recognize and fully appreciate that type of thing is not for everybody. And sometimes it's not for me either. Like, there are times where that kind of humor does not jive. Like, it doesn't work for me either. So, like, it's not even, I'm not even consistent when it comes to that kind of stuff. But in this one, for whatever reason, the kind of farcical kind of Wicker Man thing, where the, not just that, oh, they're not the real threat, there's the real threat is elsewhere, but just sort of like, just the play ups of all the theatrics as being actual theatrics. And, like, and just like when they're in the little rec hall thing and they're having a serious conversation, the one guy's dressed as a fucking bee and the other guy's dressed as a spider and he's like, oh, should we be concerned? And he just gets little wobbly legs behind him. Like, just stuff like that. I'm just like, oh, for just.
Oh, and Spider Guy also gets stuck in the door.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. just, you know, and then there's like little bits of dialogue that I wonder how, if they were in the script or not, where the whole thing about like the, you know, like, though they still hold a grudge, whatever else, like, it's like, and then Nick Frost just looks at her and just goes, you should talk Irish, girl.
That was really funny.
That was fucking brilliant. And then she's got that line about the dock lady with her little clipboard or whatever else, and this is like, where are you heading? And like, where are you heading, silly person? Like, stuff like that. It's just like these things, like this little burst of personality that just sneak their way.
Well, there. Like, I laughed out loud at the, you know, you shouldn't. I tried weed once and it wasn't good. It's all right. Weed's not my thing. Oh, what is your thing? Cocaine and fat dicks. That shit is funny. Like, it's a good confirmation that the tone has shifted completely.
Well, because I mean, and we've seen enough Rob Zombie ones where you have the fucked up inbred family that are trying to play normal, and they've got the fucked up shit right. everywhere, and everything's gross, and it's like, and so it's kind of fun to watch a thing where like these like sadistic, awful people are like they have a desperate desire to just like play situational comedy characters, like they mm-hmm. would just they want to play normal, and like, and so they're really leaning into the normality of you know, whatever these kind of characters, and that I think is kind of novel. Like, you know, we get enough gross over the top things where it's like it's fun to watch a more controlled thing, and I really enjoyed a lot too. I thought that was really funny.
Yeah, like by the end of it, I felt like it didn't rise all the way to Hoot status. I feel like it had Hoot moments. I had, I don't know, Hoot sweets. But like...
All right.
Yeah. I did enjoy large swaths of this. And, you know, Nick Frost as Clueless Dad was just delightful all the way through, because... The character he's LARPing is kind of dad joke guy, but you can tell that he is super into it. Mm. I really dig that. For some reason, identified with the middle-aged guy who keeps telling lame jokes, and he knows they're lame, but he has to sell them anyway, or they will reverberate inside his skull. Anyway, sure.
Oh, this the thing about the fucking paprika chicken. Hey, I didn't get the paprika. Or the chicken. And the look on her face, she just has a little side turn of her head. And it's just like, I think that might be the other thing too. Like if you'd seen her in The Way Up or like a lot of her comedy, like once you kind of get to know her, like her like stage personality and that kind of stuff, whatever else, some of the bits in this where she does this little body movements or little expressions, whatever else, I probably found it maybe more funny than the average bear just because I'm super familiar with like her comedy and humor and stuff like that. So little bits like that when he says the thing with the paprika and the chicken, she just kind of goes ding. It's like,
I did have the aha moment watching this when I realized eventually, like halfway through, that Matts is the same actor from Border that we brought up randomly the other day, and I was like, God, that's why I know that guy, because it's weird without the additional makeup. But it's weird to see that dude pop up in two things I saw in like a 2 month span. But
yeah, he's an actor who is always damp.
Yep.
Kind of looks like a cross between like Crispin Glover and the Zodiac Killer.
Mm. Yeah, that works.
I mean, if you squint. So for me, this is like a 6 out of 10. You know, it's got some fun bits. It's better than average. Not quite a hoot. That's what I say.
Yeah, I also landed at 6 on this one. Like I said, I've been wrestling with whether like all the things that make me mad are also reasons the movie's good, or if I'm just who knows. It hurt my brain to think about it, so I tried not to most of the time. I thought maybe this would clear it up. Did not. I appreciate the attempts that might have been made. But yeah, like I recognize that those might be weird little quirks more of me than anything else. And there were plenty of parts of this that I enjoyed. So yeah, it's not bad. So it still ends up at a 6. This was a lot of kind of middle of the road this week, with the exception of Companion for me. Yeah.
So I'm going to be the high man of the totem pole. Like I enjoyed this quite a bit. Like it went more loony, where like, you know, was that one like a year and a half ago, or not a year and a half ago, Christ, like more like 4 or 5 years ago, Prevenge, where sort of like, I think they were trying to go for the deadpan humor at times, and it just felt like just interminable at moments. Like this just had a more of a breezy sort of upfeel to me. And like I said, I absolutely acknowledge this is not going to be for everybody. So it's sort of like, but yeah, I enjoyed it sort of, a loopy, silly, ridiculous thing, and then the bad guys win. It's like, it's even better. So you know, so I'm gonna be the high mental level. I'm gonna say 8 out of 10, 8 out of 10. The stern faced threat of leaving a less than positive review on TripAdvisor.
mm-hmm.
This is like, yep, middle class suburban rage is universal.
Every time somebody says like, well, this will be reflected in my review, I cringe a little because I did that once.
Ugh.
It was a shitty place and I was there with my children and it was hot and there was no air conditioning and the fans didn't work and yeah. But that's what you say when you have nothing else, when you know you have no bargaining chips at all. Have the added leverage of having paid you in advance. There you go. All right, we'll take a quick break and we'll be back with stuff for next time. So next up, we're going to pick up some stuff that we thought looked fun. Shudder finally has Humanist Vampire Seeks Consenting Suicidal Person that was making the route, like the festival circuit, and seemed to be getting some good feedback. So we're going to try that. We're also going to watch Your Monster, which is, I didn't see where that was, but
let me check
another that. Like 2024 one, Your Monster, streaming wherever you stream things. Then we're going to make it out to the theater to see Heart Eyes because some of us have already seen it and have found it to be awesome. So Humanist Vampire, etc., Your Monster, and Heart Eyes. And I've been Josh this entire time, and I will bid you a fondue.
All right, let's see. I am certainly not frantically looking into the folder to see what short I'd put aside. We will be doing Man on a Train next week as our short, which will be embedded on our website at horseshowhotdog.com, or this one you should be able to find if you look on YouTube. Quick little kind of spooky thing. And let's see. With that said, I've been Matt this entire time, as far as you know, and I'm sorry.
Your Monster, by the way, is on HBO, because I'm not going to call it Max, because that's dumb.
Yeah.
This is Charlie and Austin. Take care of yourself. Take care of each other. As we record this, the next day, actually, I guess it's now, is Valentine's Day. So, you know, make sure you take care of yourselves and take care of each other. And if you didn't spend $300, $400, $500 and shoved up a Hallmark's, you know, big monolithic, you know, fake god ass, then it's okay. You'll be all right.
And a happy new year.
Happy new year. Because, you know, God forbid anybody actually enjoy whatever weird holiday they want to enjoy. I can't have it.
No. But bye.
Bye. See you later.
God, I haven't done my yearly watch of Werewolf. I need to get on that.
Thar Wolf.
The goddamn werewolf.
Werewolf.
The Yanaglachi.
Yeah, I watched that after we
the Hetate.
It came up the other day.
With Hoochie Coochie Hichikichi.
So good.
So many of the quotes of that. So many of those quotes have just found their way into like the family lexicon. You know, like the people say rack to me a lot. Rackham. People say rack to me a lot. Oh no, Paul, you say warwolf.
Werewolf. Werewolf. That and then the thing with the skull, like that's another thing that like that and that is insidious because like Conan does that and now he's permeated that outward, so his friends do that, and like I don't know how many have actually seen the original one. I mean, of course Conan has, but like I don't know how many of them have seen the thing, but they'll do that where like you see some object or something like a mouth open. It's just like you can't help it. It's like shaving a haircut. Sort of like Roger Rabbit just losing his crap behind the wall. It's just sort of the same kind of thing. Like you see a little something with an open mouth like that, and you're like, I have to.
That can really wreck the mood in a movie, like being reminded of that.
Yeah.
Just as surely now as anytime somebody says, "You brought me here to die," or "I came here to die." To go, no, mate, you came here yesterday.